No, we are not in Daniel, but we're going to go there. So, we're in the book of Revelation, chapter 9. Hoping, I've been debating, and I hope it's the right thing to do and that the Lord has led properly, but I feel compelled to show you. One of the things that you criticize me about is the length of time to get through this book. And well, that's fine. One of the things, though, about Revelation is I told you back when we first started this a year or two ago that it's, I don't remember when it was, but that the book, the Revelation, is not some isolated piece of literature that John wrote in 96 AD. It has a foundation. And one of the issues in that foundation is that if you really want insight in it, you have to know what? The entire Bible. In other words, every time I study a passage, it's going to happen this morning, assuming we get to chapter 10. When I study a passage, it begins to take on meaning when you begin to understand the background that historically has been laid out in the Old Testament and in the New Testament that culminates in the book of Revelation, which is a pinnacle. Do you know that we would know very little about the future without the book of Revelation? We would have glimpses that Jesus Christ is going to come again, that He's going to have a kingdom and so forth, but we could never really pull it together unless we had the book of Revelation and as a foundation the book of Daniel. We have been studying the first nine chapters, which most believe, not all, but many believe, are the first 3.5 years of a 7-year period of time that we call the Great Tribulation, the time of Jacob's trouble, a time when God is going to pour out His wrath on this earth. So I want to give you a quick test. What was the first group of judgments?
Seal
judgment. And the first judgment was? The rider on the white horse. What was the second one? The red horse. The third one? Black horse. What did the black horse represent? Great, man, you're doing great. Are you reading? Or are you just? I'm impressed. What was the fourth one? Huh? The pale horse. The horse of death. A quarter of the earth was killed in that horse. 1.75 billion people. All right. What was the fifth seal? The martyrdom. All the people who had been martyred, apparently in some outpouring of persecution on those who put their faith in Jesus Christ. What was the sixth one?
Earthquakes
and all types of atmospheric type deals and things in the universe that were incredible. Now, that was the first six seals, and that leaves what? Seventh seal, right? And out of the seventh seal, when it was open, there came what?
Seven
trumpets, all right? And of those seven trumpets, what was the first one? And it did what? It burned up a third of the earth. Then what happened? What was the second one? What was the second one, Jim? You had a, how about a burning mountain that was cast into the sea? That would be yours. All right. He found an asteroid that he sent me. It was 333 miles across. That literally had mountains on it that were taller than any mountain on the in the world today, in Everest. In other words, this is a huge asteroid. And it poisoned a third of the sea. A third of the ships were destroyed. Who remembers what the third trumpet was? The waters. The great... star that hits the waters and poisons a third of the waters. Who remembers what the fourth trumpet was? 16-hour days. All right. And then the fifth trumpet. What did you say over here? All right, the locusts, but they came, they're not really locusts, are they? Where do they come from? Come out of the bottomless pit. Right? And they could sting people. And God actually said, believe it or not, all those other plagues that we've just talked about, up until that plague, He said, these are actually going to be bad. Think about that. And He said, these locusts are going to come out, and they're going to sting people, and it's going to hurt for 5 months. They're going to want to die, and so forth. And what was the sixth trumpet? The army of 200 million, whatever that is, whether it be men or demons. Now, beyond the fact that it's almost incomprehensible to think that those plagues could actually come true in 7 years, so the question was asking me, what would be your mental state if you were living during that time?
Horror.
Huh?
Horror.
Horror. Can you imagine? And you know what Jesus said? When they talked about the fact that these signs would start, He said, you know, they'll just be eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage and just rocking along. The human mind has some capacity that God has put in it, that no matter what comes our way, we tend to get through it. Most people, not always. This 200 million army that is in chapter 9 is one army that we really don't know who they are. But there are several armies in the book of Revelation. And there are many people who teach that, you know, the church is going to do such a great work that it's actually going to bring in the kingdom. That's post-millennialism. That we're going to, in fact, bring in the millennium. And there's others that do not think that Christianity has anything to do with war or war is connected with God's program. And yet, the Bible is full of references to God's program. I want to turn to Revelation chapter 16. It'll be a while before we get there, but you will forget it by the time we get there, I'm sure. But actually, you're doing really well today in remembering what's going on. By the way, if when you leave this course, you can recite the answers to the questions I just gave you, what percentage of Christianity do you think could do that?
Zero.
Huh?
Zero.
Less than 1% could do that. Well, how about this test? What was the first chapter about? What, Shelley? No?
The Revelation.
Jesus was told John to write what? Well, what he saw and so forth, but he said, write about the things that were, are, and will be. Chapter 1 is about what was. And what was? Jesus Christ. John has a vision of Jesus. Who remembers what chapters 2 and 3 are about? See, you're doing good. How about 4 and 5? The elders and in heaven and opening the scroll, remember? How about 6? The beginning of the seal judgments. The opening of the seal judgments. What was 7? It was an interlude. And it was an interlude concerning some people. Who were they? 144,000 and who else? The Gentiles you couldn't count. Alright, you see? How about what's chapter 8? And 9? The trumpets. 8 and 9 is the trumpets. All right, so you're up to date. In chapter 16, we have another set of plagues. And the sixth one found in chapter 16, verse 12. Because 15 and 16 deal with the bowl judgments. The vile judgments, as they call them. It says, the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river, the Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way would be prepared for the kings from the east. Now, a lot of commentators hook this particular bowl judgment along with the 200 million who are released somewhere around the Euphrates River and say they're one and the same. We do not know that. But this particular war is the final war before the kingdom of Jesus Christ is established. And that particular war is what we call Armageddon. Anybody in here never heard of Armageddon? It's famous, isn't it? Most people know there is an Armageddon and they think that we're on the edge of it right now, and yet we have a long time to go, at least 7 years, before we get there. But this army is the kings of the east are coming. Now I want you to turn back to the book of Daniel chapter 11 and I'll show you another movement. One of the things that for me is the most difficult in studying the prophetic aspect is I know a lot of what the pieces are, I just don't know what. How they go together. I know when they take place. In other words, I know they're in this 7-year period. I just can't identify what is actually happening. In chapter 11, starting at verse 40, speaking of the Antichrist in the tribulation period, we have another movement or another aspect of this war which ultimately will lead to Armageddon. It says at the end time, the king of the south will collide with him, and the king of the north will storm against him with chariots. The him is the Antichrist. Verse 40. 11:40. With horses and with many ships, he will enter the countries, overflow them and pass through. He will also enter the beautiful land, which is Israel, and many countries will fall, but these will be rescued out of his hand. Edom, Moab, and the foremost of the sons of Ammon. Which, by the way, who knows which country that is today? Somebody said it, I think. Jordan. It's Jordan. It's on the west, east bank of the Jordan River and so forth. And it says, then he'll stretch out his hands against other countries, and the land of Egypt will not escape. But he will gain control over the hidden treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt and Libya and the Ethiopians, Beverly, and will follow at his heels. But rumors from the east and from the north will disturb him. From the east, I believe, is a reference to Revelation chapter 16, where these armies are marching from China. Some say those armies are the 200 million. As I've told you, we don't really know that. And he says, it will disturb him, and he will go forth with great wrath to destroy and annihilate many. He will pitch his tents of his royal pavilion between the seas and the beautiful holy mountain. And yet he will come to his end, and no one will help him. And that's a direct reference to Jesus Christ coming back. Now, I'm not going into another battle, but there is another huge battle during, perhaps could happen before this time, but many believe it's either right before the tribulation or in the middle of it or in the beginning. And that is the battle of Ezekiel 38-39. That battle, which is forecasted to take place at the end of times, is a battle that involves a very select number of countries. Primarily, what we know today is the stands, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Pakistan, etc., southern Russia, Iran or Persia, Ethiopia again, Libya. Isn't it interesting that all these are prominent today in the news? And Turkey, which has just become pro-Muslim and anti-American, and then somebody called Gomer, who we're not real sure who that is. That battle takes place, and God says that his rage, he inhales his rage and destroys those armies. The final battle, though, that I wanted to get to this morning is found in the book of Joel. Joel is to the right of Daniel, right after the book of Hosea. Joel chapter 1. Joel sees a vision. And a vision he likens it unto locusts, which kind of tags along with Revelation chapter 9. But I wanted to point out a few things to you. Starting in verse 15. Alas, for the day of the Lord is near. Now, what is the day of the Lord? Hmm? It is our 7 years tribulation. It actually extends all the way through the millennium to the great white throne judgment. But it starts in the tribulation period. And Joel has a vision, and he has a vision of things he says are like locusts. And he goes through and he talks about the destruction of their land up to this point. And then he says, "Alas, for the day of the Lord is near, and it will come as a destruction from the Almighty." Now listen carefully. Has not food been cut off before our eyes, and gladness and joy from the house of our God? When he says, has not food been cut off before our eyes, could you relate that at all to what we've studied in the book of Revelation? And where would you relate it to? The first trumpet. The first trumpet judgment. And the third seal of the war of famine and the horse and so forth. It says the seeds shrivel under their clods, the storehouses are desolate, the barns are torn down, for the grain is dried up, for how the beasts groan, the herds of cattle wander aimlessly because there is no pasture for them. Even the flocks of sheep suffer. To you, O Lord, I cry, for fire has devoured the pastures of the wilderness. You could write in right there, the first trumpet. All right? And the flame has burned up all the trees of the field. Even the beasts of the field pant for you, for the water brooks are dried up, and fire has devoured the pastures of the wilderness. And then he gets into an invasion. And he says this, blow a trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm on my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. Surely it is near. And he describes it as a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness. And let me make a comment there. There is a bowl judgment where the sun actually goes out, or appears to go out. But the day of the Lord is always described as a depressing time. A day of destruction, a day of darkness, a day of gloom, a day of clouds, and then even says thick darkness as the dawn is spread over the mountains. And so there is a great and mighty people. There has never been anything like it. All right? So Joel has a vision of a people invading the Middle East. And he says there's nothing like them. And he says, nor will there ever be again after it, to the years of many generations. In other words, his description of this army is that there is nothing like it, ever or ever will be. Sort of like Jesus' description of this tribulation period, that it is, there is nothing like it, nor ever will be like it again. Now listen to what he says about them. A fire consumes before them, and behind them a flame burns. So you have an army marching. What would be a reasonable question to ask when you read that? Do you know when Joel lived? AD 830 BC, more or less. What ability did they have then to have an army that as they marched, fire went out in front of them? The answer is no. We're not aware of anything. But what does it say? It says that a fire consumes before them and the flames behind them. In other words, you get the picture that as they're marching, everything is burned up in their path. Tom?
Are you thinking like a nuclear missile?
I don't know what it is. I just take it for what it says. You know, you have flamethrowers, as you remember, in the military and so forth. But this looks like much more destruction in the future, right? And then it says, and nothing, it says, excuse me, the land is like the Garden of Eden before them, but a desolate wilderness behind them, and nothing at all escapes them. So you get this picture of this army that's marching. I really think this could have a reference to this plague we see in the sixth trumpet, where they're marching, and before them there's grass and all that, but they just what? Burn it, consume it up as they go forward. And then it says, their appearance is like the appearance of horses and like war horses, so they run. So they have some appearance that Joel sees. He says they look like horses. Whether they are horses or not, we don't know. It doesn't sound like it. They obviously must have some type of armor on them because they look like war horses. And it says they leap on the mountains. or I'm sorry, I skipped something, with a noise as of chariots. They leap on the tops of the mountains, like the crackling of a flame of fire consuming the stubble, like a mighty people arranged for battle. Before them, the people are in anguish, all their faces turn pale. They run like mighty men, they climb the wall like soldiers. So, he sees horses, but when he sees his horses, everybody in front of them is terrified, and they climb over the walls like they were men. Strange critters, huh? And then he says this, and they each march in line and do not deviate from their paths. So you get this picture that they move and they don't break ranks, and they just go over anything in their path. I've seen tanks do that, but I don't know if a tank would look like a horse or not. It says they do not crowd each other. They march everyone in his path. And when they burst through the defenses, they do not break ranks. They rush on the city. They run on the wall. They climb into the houses. They enter through the windows like a thief. And before them the earth quakes. The heavens tremble and the sun and the moon go dark. Is this an awesome invasion? Man. And the stars lose their brightness. And the Lord utters His voice before His army. Surely His camp is very great. For strong is He who carries out His word. The day of the Lord is indeed great and very awesome. And who can endure it? There are numerous battles in the Bible. I've told you about the major ones. And we'll focus more when we get to Armageddon about that. But when John sees this sixth trumpet, what he sees is this awesome invasion of 200 million creatures that again destroy a third of the world. And any questions?
You know, Chuck, I thought about these horses. By this time, there may not be any oil.
Might be real horses, huh?
It may be real horses.
Yeah.
I mean, we've destroyed all the oil fields and everything.
All right.
But they climb walls.
They climb walls. They're strange critters, aren't they? Rich?
I think he's describing that same army in Joel 1:6.
All right.
He talks about the teeth of a lion.
Yeah, for mighty in number, its teeth are the teeth of a lion. And by the way, in that context, Rich, they're described as locusts. But they said a head of a locust is like the head of a horse. And there is a similarity in appearance. But there it says his teeth are the teeth of a lion and has the fangs of a lioness. Is made, that's in verse 1:6. It has made my vine a waste and my fig tree splinters. It stripped them bare and cast them away. Their branches have become white. Now we buy our groceries at Kroger or Fiesta or various places, don't we? Back during this time, where did you get your groceries? You grew them. So what was the worst thing that could happen to your groceries? The locust would come and do what? My understanding is that when a locust goes through a field, there is absolutely nothing left. They just annihilate it. And I believe, Rich, that Joel is trying to create that picture for this army. It's like the locust, because if you read through it, it parallels a locust. And he's also relating it to something his readers could understand, which is a locust. Anybody else? Any questions? Yes.
I guess I have an observation. I was trying to work through, okay, you have the Gog and Magog war, and a lot of the Middle East decimated, and then you have all these plagues and all these people dead, and yet countries are still putting forth armies. And we're like, well, how can they even have the infrastructure left to do that? But then I thought about North Korea.
All right. And North
Korea. Evil dictator is putting all of his people's money into his army, and that nation is starving.
Right.
So that made me think, well, maybe, all these evil kings, they're putting all of their remaining resources into the army.
Yeah, and what he's saying, if you didn't hear him, is that he's trying to figure out, if you have all these people destroyed, where are the new ones coming from? Of course, you got 7 billion people on the planet. And China, by the way, has a big army. Now, theirs is mainly a militia, as I understand, as far as numbers. And what John is saying is that when you have regimes like, forgotten the guy's name, but that heads up North Korea, Jim Yell Young, is that it?
Yeah.
Jim Young Yell, it's all the same. It's all. You can't call him Chuck, you know. Something simple, you know.
Kim.
Okay, Kim. All right, that's simple. That's a girl's name. Anyway, Kim. Yeah. We're Kim Jong Il, right? Is that right? Yeah. Okay. He literally, for his own preservation, would allow his people to starve in order to build up his military. And you've got to remember the dynamic going on in this period of time. And that is, you have the Antichrist, who has basically built a world kingdom, but he's got parts of it that are not happy. And Daniel tells us that there are three, in Daniel 7, that there are three parts of his 10-king confederacy that he has to defeat, and so that's going to bring about a war. There's so many wars, John, it's just unbelievable to try to put them together into a coherent pattern. I've seen people try to do that. The one thing that we see is that these armies in chapter 9 for the 5th and 6th trumpet judgments are just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, if you could even imagine 200 million people invading the United States, for example, and moving across it, what could stand in their path? Nothing. The Lord could, that's true. Unfortunately, He's not going to here when He makes that decision. Any other questions? Yes, Karen.
When it talks about 200 million, and of course they're writing something that they have no idea what they're writing. I mean, when I think about John
right.
writing Revelation, he must have thought he was sniffing some real
wrong. Yeah, because there wasn't even that many people on the planet.
I mean, how do you describe something you've never even had a slightest view? Could it be that the 200 million, it would be, you would say, well, it was like 200. When you think the atomic blast and man who's never knew anything and what that did, what it looked like, and how is that possible?
Well, the number that he uses is a number that indicates tens of thousands of tens of thousands, and when you multiply it out. But the thing you have to remember is John said, you know, if Rob, you're a mathematician, if you were to stand out and say, I'm going to count 200 million, how long would that take you and would you get there?
It would
take you a while, wouldn't it? And so what did John say? John said, I heard the number. In other words, he wants you to know that this number is so staggering. I actually had to hear that number because I couldn't count them. I had to be told exactly how many it was. Yes, Ron.
Chuck, I think that's no different than Abraham and the ancients who lived in tents 5,000 years ago were told how the universe was created. They didn't think it up. God said, write this down exactly what I'm telling you.
Right.
Because this is how, and nobody proved it until Einstein, but for 5,000 years, it was in the Bible.
Right.
And so I think it's just like John. He saw things. The things he didn't understand, they told him, write this down, write this down.
Right.
Because he was just a scribe.
He's just writing down what he sees, what he hears, and it's some phenomenal stuff. My favorite one, you know, is chapter 11, where CNN is televising the death of the two witnesses. You know, how are you going to describe in 96 A.D., worldwide satellite TV? Well, Facebook. Maybe Facebook's in there. I don't know. I mean, these are phenomenal things that are just beyond comprehension. I'm always amazed when I study this book at how well John describes what he sees, because he has no way to relate what he sees.
That's why he was put on Patmos.
Yeah, he was alone. He was separate, and he had this vision, and he wrote down what he saw. We're going to look next week, because we're not going to get there today, of a comment about what the prophets wrote. I've been reading a little bit lately on the internet and so forth. This issue of creation is getting to be a huge issue. And what I've been reading is, whenever you have a Christian website on the internet or whatever that speaks to creation, you have all these people who literally say that we who believe that God created this earth about 6,000 years ago, 10,000 years, God don't care, by speaking it into existence in 6 days, we are declared to be complete idiots, bumbling fools, stupid. I mean, every word you can think of to categorize us, and you see it as a movement toward the concept of evolution. It's even happened in our political race, where they attack Rick Perry, you know, for example, on what he believes about creation, and how could he be so stupid to believe. Well, let me tell you how stupid you can be. I serve as an expert witness in cases. Had a deposition yesterday, or Friday, had one the week before, testified 50-100 times. When I first started, I thought I could just make it up. But what I mean by that is, somebody would ask me, where did I come to that opinion? And I would say, well, based on my experience of 42 years, this is the way it is. Unfortunately, they kind of changed in the law area. Now you have to make your opinion based on something outside other than you. But one of the things that I've learned in order to be a good expert is that there are a whole lot of things I know, but there's a whole lot more I don't know. In my first case with Fulbright Jaworski, they made me sit down and watch a tape on how to be a great expert. And they said you need to learn to be able to say these two things with power and conviction. It'll make you a great expert, you make a lot of money. The two things that they taught me to say is, I don't know. And I don't remember. Does that make sense?
That's what the politicians say when they're in the
corner. That's what the husbands say.
That's what the husbands say. There's a reason that I'm giving you that analogy, because that's how I make my living. In other words, the really best expert on the planet knows what he really knows, and he knows what he doesn't know. People you're talking about, Ron, who say that this earth happened a certain way would make lousy experts. Because you see, they have no evidence that they have seen and can validate. Do you understand? In the 6 days it took to create this planet, there was only one expert around. And that's the one who did it. And if we have any faith in him, we know that he wrote down truthfully what really happened. Now, he did not go into extraordinary detail. Do you know why? Because we're too stupid to understand anyway. I mean, how can you imagine? Just look at the variety of plants and animals on this planet. Can you imagine just speaking in 2 days and all that complexity comes about? What would it take to be able to do that? Incredible wisdom and power. The world does not know that God. When they make fun of you because you believe that, keep in mind, they'd make lousy experts and they have no clue what they're doing or talking about. One of the things that really throws them a curve, if you were in our Genesis study, is when you state, for example, that they say this was created 4 billion years ago, but they really have no evidence of that. They're just making the number up. Because they do not understand the concept that when God created this earth, He created it with age. He didn't create Adam as a brand new one-day-old baby and leave him on the ground or grow up. He created him as 30 years old or so. He didn't create the great trees as though they were just seeds in the ground. He created them full grown. And when he really wants to mess with people's minds, he creates rocks with a half-life that seems like they've been billions of years old when they're only about 6,000 years old. I believe the Word of God. And I believe, no matter what somebody says about how stupid I am, though it always disturbs me. It disturbs you, right, if you're called an idiot.
Yeah. How would we know?
You talking about me or them? I believe the very best evidence you have of what happened in creation is by the one who was actually there and did it. And let me tell you one other thing. Why do I have such faith in the Bible? Because the Word of God prophetically is so accurate, it had to be written by somebody who knew the future. Yes, sir.
On Bill O'Reilly, they have famous atheists.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and he said, have you figured out yet where life came from? I need him who brought Bill O'Reilly
says,
get back with
me. Get back with me. It's an amazing phenomenon. Ron, one more time. And y'all have burned up my whole time.
One of my favorite quotes from Einstein was that he said to somebody that I knew that God created the universe, and just asked him to show me how he did it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good quote. Einstein said, I knew God created the universe, I just asked him to show me how he did it. I was told by Jim that going to be on the Bible Answer Man Thursday week, right before the big conference over at Sugar Creek Baptist. And you said they're going to have Hugh Ross there, right?
No, it's
one of his disciples. One of his disciples, okay. Hugh Ross is a guy that, when we study Genesis, is a guy that believes that evolution is compatible with the biblical account. And claims to be a Christian. And I don't doubt that or criticize that. He's just wrong. He's a bad expert. You can't reach the... What do we really know back happened 6,000 years ago? Can you even remember last week?
No.
I'll close with this, since you got me off on that. But now I'm ready for next week, and I don't even have to prepare. In Revelation chapter 9... We mentioned this last week, but let me conclude by saying this. After all those plagues we went through, and half of the people on the earth perishing, right? The water being poisoned, sea fresh and seawater, the earth going 16-hour days, this 200 million man army, these locusts who sting you for 5 months, the rational person would say, maybe I should repent. Yeah. Right? But I'm going to show you the depth of the depravity of the human soul. Verse 20. The rest of the mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the work of their hands. They didn't change their mind. What does that mean? They just what? Kept on trucking. So as to not worship demons and the idols of gold and of silver and of brass and of stone and of wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk. Isn't it interesting that in the future, even though we know idols are worthless today, people are going to turn back to them? And we know that. Revelation 13 says that the Antichrist or the false prophet is going to create an idol for the whole world to worship. Did you know that? And so the world is going to revert back to idolatry because we're gone. And there is the only light they have is from the 144,000 and those who are saved during the period. And then it says this, which can neither see nor hear nor walk, and they did not repent of their murders, which must mean it's rampant during that time, nor of their pharmakia, their sorceries, or their drugs, nor of their immorality, nor of their thefts. I think we got a bunch of the commandments in there, didn't we? Next week, we're going to look at a little something a little different, an interlude, chapter 10. Have a great week.